meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good afternoon. This is Mary Helen Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C. I'm sitting in again today for Father Anthony on Winds of Change here on AM 750 WNDZ. And welcome to all of those as well who are listening to us on the windsofchangeshow.com live stream. I am in studio today with Emily Trzynski, who's the Executive Director of Illinois Right to Life, which is the oldest pro-life organization in Illinois. Illinois Right to Life, for those who aren't familiar with it, is a nonprofit organization that attempts to educate on the issues that surround things like abortion and end-of-life issues like assisted suicide and euthanasia. And it does that regardless of a person's size, gender, race, age, disability. In Illinois Right to Life, the mission statement believes that all human life is worthy of respect and protection from conception through natural death. And so Emily Trzynski is the executive director. Welcome, Emily. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It's wonderful that we can have this conversation. So Emily has sort of a long history in the pro-life movement. Prior to going to Illinois Right to Life, she was at the Thomas Morris Society, which is a national nonprofit public interest law firm. And her focus there was on pro-life and religious liberty issues. She's also worked with many of the local and national pro-life organizations that are active here, including 40 Days for Life, Live Action, the Pro-Life Action League, Students for Life, the Chicago March for Life, Catholic Charities. So Emily really has a lot of experience in interfacing with the many different components of the pro-life movement and their leadership. But her organization, Illinois Right to Life, is most specifically focusing on reaching out to students and to other people in the general public to educate them about pro-life issues, because we find even so many years after Roe versus Wade that the vast majority of Americans still can't even tell us what Roe versus Wade actually held. Does that still remain to be true? I remember that statistic from not too long ago.
It does. It remains to be true. And it's also interesting to see how quickly high school students will pick up Planned Parenthood's talking points. But when you press them for more details, they don't know much beyond that.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And, you know, when I talk to college students in particular, I'm still doing that, you know, debates on college campuses. The number of people that don't realize that Roe versus Wade and its companion cases, Doe versus Bolton, legalized abortion for all 9 months for any reason, people are still shocked. Even though this has been the law of the land for decades and decades, most people still don't know what Roe versus Wade actually held. So when, you know, there's these polls that come out that are often cited by Planned Parenthood and others, Emily, you mentioned them, that said, you know, the majority of American people support Roe versus Wade. Well, but when you ask them, do they actually know what Roe versus Wade held, the statistics get a little bit murkier, and you actually find most people really opposing abortion in most circumstances.
Absolutely. And we see a huge support for parental notification, parental consent of abortion. We see a huge support for a 20-week ban that, you know, protects the mother and the unborn child after the child can feel pain. And so Planned Parenthood really likes to be as general as possible with their polling so that they can you know, fabricate this support for abortion that is really dwindling very quickly.
No, you know, it's interesting. I was driving one of my kids down to a summer school class in downtown Chicago. This was just 2 weeks ago, and I was with my eldest teenage daughter, who's 16, and we're outside of a Starbucks, and very, you know, well-dressed, very articulate African-American young woman stopped me and said, "Do you have a minute for Planned Parenthood?" And I heard my daughter muttering, "Oh, you have just stopped the wrong person." So it was kind of funny. But I said, "Now, what's a nice young woman like you doing working for a place like Planned Parenthood?" And she said, and she knew exactly what I meant. She said, "It's only 3% of our services." And what she meant by that is a statistic that Planned Parenthood often throws around, right? That abortion makes up only 3% of what they do. And I said to her, "Now, come on." I said, "The Washington Post even, you know, studied that number that you use and gave it 3 Pinocchios. They have this rating on, you know, facts, a fact check thing, and they use it by Pinocchios. And they got 3 out of 4 Pinocchios for saying that only 3% of their services are abortions." Can you elaborate on that a little bit, Emily, as someone who knows so much about Planned Parenthood?
Yeah, you know, we always use the analogy when we're talking to students about if there was a cleaning service that, you know, cleaned your clothes for you, a dry cleaning service, and only 3% of what they did was a meth business, would you still go and say that cleaning service should be operational, funded by the government, and that you would continue to frequent it?
Yeah.
The question is really not how many abortions they do, but what is their corporate policies and what do they stand for as a corporation? And
right.
They are the largest entity in the country pushing abortions. They do 1/3 of their country's entire number of abortions.
Right.
And they oppose so many common sense laws like, you know, not aborting children for reasons of they have Down syndrome or sex selective abortions. They just support these. And it's the most outrageous. The fact that in America today, these laws can be defended by Planned Parenthood is just atrocious.
Yeah, they do tend to support really the very extreme end of the pro-choice movement. And as you referenced, and what I tried to say to this young woman who stopped me, I said, "Listen, you do more than 300,000 abortions every single year." I used the same number you did. I said, "You're doing 1/3 of the nation's abortions. You're the largest corporate abortion provider in the United States. You cannot stand there with a straight face and tell me that's not what you're about." I said, "And you don't own one mammogram machine. You claim to be an organization that provides mammograms and breast health information to women, but not one Planned Parenthood clinic anywhere in this country owns a mammogram machine. And if I called and it said I needed a mammogram, you wouldn't be able to service me." And she just walked. She said, "Well, we'll have to agree to disagree." And she walked away, which was probably better for her and better for me. But I think when you are armed with the facts, which is why I love so much what Illinois Right to Life does, because you empower students in particular, but also the general public with facts and with information where they really understand what it is that abortion is and what it is that it does to women and what it is that it does to society and why we, you know, societally need to take a very hard look at what abortion law is. So that was one of the things I wanted to talk to you today about today, Emily, is an article that was on the front page of the Chicago Tribune on July 14th. It was in the front page of the Sunday paper, above the fold, as we say in the media business, about the number of women who now travel to Illinois to have abortions. This show is broadcast to a number of our neighboring states, to Michigan and to Indiana and to Wisconsin and to Iowa, all of which have, through their state legislatures, opted to place some very common sense limitations on where and when abortions can be performed and how they can be performed. So, for example, Indiana has a 20-week ban. So, you know, we know what neonatologists and neurologists tell us is that fetal pain receptors are absolutely present by 18 weeks, certainly by 20 weeks, and therefore the amount of pain that an unborn child would feel during that that abortion procedure, even a child with a disability, right? That's always the excuse that's used, is that you need to have post 20-week abortions legal because people who find that they're expecting a child with special needs or disabilities may want to choose to end that pregnancy. So women are coming here to get around parental notice laws, parental involvement laws, 20-week bans, but also to get around 24-hour or 48-hour waiting periods. Can you speak a little bit about those laws?
Yeah, you know, these laws are really put into place in our neighboring states because they protect women. Many women that go in to get an abortion, they feel pressured. They feel like they have no other choice. And this is not only reflected in the data and what women say themselves. This is our experience at Illinois Right to Life, where we have women call and we counsel them, and women call us before they have the abortion or as they're trying to seek the abortion. And so they tell us over and over again, they feel like they have no other choice. Or after they've had their abortion, they said, I had no idea what I had done. And so these laws are really there to inform and empower women to make the right decision. And what Illinois likes to do is they like to criminalize these laws and say that these laws really hurt women, that they reduce access to abortion, and therefore they're bad. And that not only is it the furthest thing from the truth, it's reflected in the numbers, because if you look at the number of abortions in Illinois compared to all five states that touch Illinois, you can add up all those numbers of abortions and you still will not reach the number of abortions in Illinois. You'll still be about 10,000 less.
Right. So for the last year that we have good statistics on this, what's Illinois' annual abortion rate?
Illinois has approximately 39,800 abortions a year.
Yeah, every year. And a large number of those, of course, do take place in Cook County. However, I think an increasing number is always taking place at Planned Parenthood's mega clinic in Aurora, Illinois. Which, of course, has been strategically placed to be very close to a number of those bordering states that you just talked about. So to
Absolutely.
Give not only women from Illinois a very quick place to go and get an abortion, but also, you know, for teenagers, for young women who don't want to seek their parents' advice or counsel. You know, for me as a mother of two teenage girls right now, it's tremendously distressing to me to know that an abortion provider could perform, you know, irreversible surgery that's invasive, that has the potential for tremendous complications on my child, and not tell me about it. Now, I'm not even, you know, talking about my giving permission. I don't even have to know. And, you know, that's a tremendously horrible violation of parental rights and parental responsibilities.
Well, in the Tribune article that you had referenced, the one of the stories was about a young girl who came from Ohio to Illinois for an abortion because she said she needed a judicial bypass, which means she didn't want to tell her parents. And in Ohio, you have to tell your parents before you get an abortion because she's a minor. And so instead, she went to Illinois so she didn't have to do that. And what the Chicago Tribune failed to look into was, why was this girl coming here? Why was she trying to go around her parents? Is there an abusive situation going on? Do we need more help for this girl?
Right.
And instead, they just celebrated the fact that she was able to come to Illinois.
Right.
Illinois, where about 60 to 66% of abortions are happening in Chicago.
Right.
And it's become, as Planned Parenthood calls it, the oasis.
Right.
The abortion oasis.
The abortion tourist capital of the Midwest. You know, not something I think Governor Rauner would want our state to be known for, but unfortunately, that's what we're known for, is being a place where you can come and have an abortion no matter what the circumstances are, no matter what, as you point out very well, Emily, no matter what those personal circumstances of the young woman might be, including, you know, perhaps, for example, she is a victim of sexual trafficking and it's her pimp bringing her here for the abortion. Or perhaps, you know, she's in an abusive situation with a boyfriend and he's dragged her here to have an abortion. Or perhaps it's a woman who, you know, for example, the Tribune story interviews a woman who had a special needs child who she aborted, I believe, at 22 or 23 weeks. Was that woman given any information about perinatal hospice? I mean, you know, that is something, you know, and again, she talked about how much she wanted this baby. This was a wanted pregnancy. But unfortunately, it sounds like she was given incomplete information about the options that are available to someone who receives an adverse prenatal diagnosis. Where the most compassionate thing, and studies have borne this out, women who use something called perinatal hospice, which would just be, you know, very similar to hospice for someone at the end of life who's very elderly. Perinatal hospice begins when you have a child who has been diagnosed or suspected to have, you know, a condition that won't be compatible with life for very long outside the womb. So you begin the hospice, you know, process with the parents, with the family, when the child is born. If the parents belong to a particular religious tradition where baptism would be important, the baby can be baptized. They have pictures. They say goodbye to the baby. And oftentimes, if the child has a condition that you know, results in the child's death, you know, a few days or a few weeks, they're able to arrange for infant organ donation. And that's an aspect of this whole tragic, you know, situation that can be very, very healing for a couple who's gone through, you know, that particular sort of thing. I have a friend who had a child who was diagnosed with a very rare form of anencephaly. It wasn't exactly anencephaly, but close enough to it. And she and her husband had recently been to a funeral of a little boy in their parish who had died. He was waiting for heart valves, a heart valve transplant, and the organs never arrived because infant organs, there's such a shortage of them, right? Because anybody who could potentially be an infant organ donor is generally aborted before they're even born. So she was very much sensitized to this issue of infant organ donation. And when her daughter was diagnosed, she said, I had to ask my doctors 3 or 4 times. And, you know, they had very little information to give me. But she went and she did the research on her own. And, you know, her daughter died about 7 hours after she was born. She was baptized. They had pictures with her grandparents. They all sang to her. They held her. She died in her father's arms, you know, not painfully, not violently. And then the day of her funeral, when they came home from the funeral, there was a letter from the Illinois organ donation bank telling them her heart valves had saved 2 critically ill children in Illinois who would have died but for that little girl's heart valves being donated. So, you know, isn't that better? I mean, isn't that better than the story we read about in the Tribune of the woman driving 3 days to have, you know, the 23-week abortion by herself and the implications for her not only physically but emotionally?
Absolutely. I think what we see in articles like this is that there are so many questions that were left unasked, and that you can make anything sound terrible, even, you know, the dismembering of an unborn child. And what we need to do is look at what we can do to bring some positive to such a negative situation or such a tough situation.
Well, when we come back, Emily, we'll continue our conversation about the Chicago Tribune's article on Illinois as an abortion tourist destination. This is Mary Helen Fiorito filling in for Father Anthony today on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
How long has it been since you've been on a picnic? Winds of Change is inviting you to St. Stan's Community Picnic on Sunday, August 20th from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. What is a picnic without food? Ethnic plates include Hispanic, Polish, and Asian for only $6 a plate, and a $3 kids hot dog plate. And what's a picnic without kids games, music, bouncy house, and of course, great food? Bring the kids, bring the family, bring your lawn chairs and sunglasses, and an appetite for great food. St. Stan's Community Picnic, Sunday, August 20th, from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. on the St. Stan's Church grounds, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Here we are sitting in the middle of the prairie at Annunciation Parish in beautiful Homer Glen, Illinois. And with me is Father Tom Loya. Father Tom, please tell us about Prairie Fest.
This is the 10th anniversary of Prairie Fest, which is a festival for the entire family where you'll enjoy music, a grand cash raffle with $12,000 in total prizes, a beer garden, animal shows, juggling, wine art, bake sale, and more.
Prairie Fest kicks off Friday, August 11th at 5 p.m. with music by Evolution Project, Piano Man, and Abba Salute. Then, on Saturday, August 12th at noon, is Family Day with kids' games, animal shows, juggling, and more. At 4 p.m., the music kicks off on Family Day. Then at 7, the Nick Lynch Band. Sunday, August 12th, starting at 11 a.m., prepare to polka with the Polka Generations Band.
While you're enjoying all of this music, food, and fun, take a guided tour of this beautiful prairie and experience the church's breathtaking interior during the Annunciation Parish Church Tours.
Only a $5 cover for those 18 and over for Prairie Fest on Friday and Saturday with free admission on Sunday. On-premises parking, just $5.
For early registration discount for the Wine Arts Studio and event schedule, visit ByzantineCatholic.com. That's ByzantineCatholic.com.
Prairie Fest, Friday through Sunday, August 11th through the 13th at Annunciation Parish, 14610 Wilcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois.
And welcome back. This is Mary Hallin Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C. And I am sitting in today for Father Anthony on Winds of Change here on AM 750 WNDZ. And I have a really incredibly interesting guest in the studio here with me today, Emily Trzynski, who is the Executive Director of Illinois Right to Life, which is the state of Illinois' oldest and arguably best-known pro-life organization. It is a non-religious organization that simply from a very scientific and secular viewpoint educates students, but also the general public about the value of each and every human life from conception to natural death, provides informational programs and educational opportunities for people who really want to get all of the facts neutrally presented to them about the abortion issue. So we have been discussing an article that was on the plastered all over the front page of the Chicago Tribune yesterday about Illinois, the state of Illinois, and its role in the Midwest as sort of an abortion tourist destination, where women who want to either avoid, young women who want to avoid their knowing or being involved in their abortion decision, women who may very well be being coerced by a partner or, you know, by someone else who has a vested interest in them not having a baby, or women who are experiencing a pregnancy where they may have been given an adverse diagnosis of their unborn child, can just very easily come here to Illinois with no questions asked, terminate their pregnancy. And what's upsetting to me about that, too, just from a medical standpoint, you know, the abortion happens, these women go back to their home states, and ostensibly there's no follow-up care from the physician who just performed an abortion on them, an invasive, irreversible surgical procedure. Emily, can you talk a little bit about that aspect of it?
Yeah, you know, if you think about any procedure that you would be getting from a doctor, you would go in and you'd have a consultation with the doctor and you'd discuss it after they had determined that it was necessary for you to have this procedure. Of course, we know abortion is never necessary, but they would discuss it with you. They talk about the pros and the cons. They would make sure you were informed about the entire process. And then you would come back a second time, you'd have the procedure, and then you come back at least one other time to have a follow-up appointment. And that's not what Planned Parenthood is doing. You know, I just am in the process of counseling one woman who did travel to Illinois to have an abortion. And she had called the Planned Parenthood emergency line after her abortion because of complications that had arose. Mm-hmm. And what Planned Parenthood told her was, you've had nothing more than a pap smear. You're fine.
Wow. Well, you know, I have a friend who is a practicing OBGYN here in the Chicago area who told me he was on call in the emergency room one night at the hospital where he's on staff, and said he had a 14-year-old girl come in with sepsis because she'd had an abortion that was incomplete. The abortion provider had not removed all the pieces of the child from her. She got an incredibly bad infection. She developed sepsis. I mean, she was in bad shape. And he said, so here I am, you know, I'm a pro-life OBGYN, and I have to go through and complete this abortion because this, you know, it obviously he wasn't doing the abortion. The damage had already, the baby was already dead, but he had to remove all the pieces. And he said, and I had to sort of piece out the remainder of the baby on this pan. He said everyone in the room was crying. The anesthesiologist started to cry. The nurse started to cry. He said there wasn't a dry eye in that entire room. He said I had to somehow keep myself composed. He said, so I found out from the girl's mother where she'd had the abortion. I went and I called the abortion provider. And I said, you sent a 14-year-old septic girl into my emergency room and put her on my operating table today. I want to talk to you. They wouldn't call him back. Never. He called twice. They refused to call him back. He said, no follow-up care, no care about this girl. He said, if someone hadn't been quickly thinking and noticed how her fever had spiked, she probably would have died. That's how advanced her sepsis was. So the fact that when women are traveling here for these tourist abortions, and that they're not establishing a relationship with the doctor. They simply go back, like, as you said, to their whatever state they're from, and, you know, have to kind of go on with their lives without telling anyone what they've just done, when in fact they've really had a pretty significant medical procedure. And if there's any complications, to whom do they go, you know?
And, you know, this just ties back into, we can all assume the motives of Planned Parenthood for operating this way. But for the past year, we have been in constant communication with the Illinois Department of Public Health and how they track these statistics about the complications and who gets abortions and whatnot. And one thing that was shocking to me is that the abortion reporting in Illinois is a mess. And so the Department of Public Health is working hard to clean it up, and we're working with them on that. But when it comes to reporting complications, the abortion clinics either don't report them or they can say that nothing happened, everything was fine in this abortion, because this girl has to go to an emergency room. Mm-hmm. They don't come back to Planned Parenthood.
Correct, right.
So then what's being reported is, oh, everything is fine. So Planned Parenthood can keep that talking point of abortion is one of the most, you know, safest procedures that you can
correct,
have.
Correct, right.
And that's just not even true, because even the Department of Public Health has admitted to us that those numbers that are being reported from hospitals, the complications, that they're not even included in the statistics we have right now.
Right. So again, you know, it's all how, you know, to go back to our beginning conversation, Emily, about Planned Parenthood's, you know, claim that only 3% of their services are abortion, when in fact they are the nation's largest provider and promoter of abortion. It's really all how you're phrasing your numbers, right? So I think, you know, here in Illinois, another very tragic case, in addition to the one I just mentioned to you, that we do know about, that there is some publicity about, is that of Tanya Reeves, who was back in 2012, in the spring of 2012, went to the Planned Parenthood clinic on Michigan Avenue to have a late-term abortion. Very beautiful, young African-American woman who began hemorrhaging right after the abortion procedure. And then I believe, if I remember the facts correctly, the Planned Parenthood staff waited several hours before they called the ambulance. She was taken to Northwestern's hospital, where she died, and left behind a 3-year-old boy. And, you know, it's interesting when you go back and if you just Google Tanya Reeves death or Tanya Reeves Planned Parenthood death, you know, the headlines that you see, even those are so skewed. You know, ABC News, our local ABC News affiliate, had a headline that said, Chicago woman's family lawyers up after abortion-related death. You know, as it now, can you imagine if this was the opposite sort of circumstances, right? Or maybe, you know, a Catholic hospital that might have, you know, somehow engaged in medical malpractice, you would never see, you know, this referred to as someone lawyering up, that the headlines would have been a little bit more respectful to the family who had just lost, you know, a daughter. This 3-year-old boy lost his mother at the hands of Planned Parenthood. And but even, you know, the secular media headlines we saw, very, very disrespectful to the Reeves family, you know, pursuing what, frankly, is a right in this state. You know, if you die, you know, during a procedure that is supposed to be this kind of routine, you know, go home after one day sort of, you know, if someone kills you during that process, you actually do have a right to sue them. I know that they settled other court for several $1 million. But I tell you, it was very distressing to see the way in which the Reeves family was handled post facto, right?
Well, and it's the media neglecting their job again, because they should be asking a lot of questions like, how come when Ms. Reeves got to the hospital, those doctors had no idea what was wrong? Why mm-hmm. weren't there medical files? Why wasn't the abortion doctor there with her in order to try and save her life? Why was Tanya Reeves in pain, suffering for 4 to 5 hours before she was transferred to the hospital?
Yeah.
Why are there no records of a ambulance being called? I mean, these are questions. And finally, why has the abortion clinic never been held responsible in terms of inspections being done or the doctor being investigated? It's just brushed over because
right.
It's politically, you know, inappropriate to talk about abortion.
Well, I understand that from the organizations that were able to obtain copies of her autopsy reports, that the autopsy indicated that her injuries that she sustained at the Planned Parenthood clinic having that second trimester abortion would have been survivable if they'd gotten her to the emergency room on time. And, you know, they said, I believe the settlement was $2 million. And I'm I'm sad that they settled for that little, and I'm sad that they didn't bring the case to trial, because I think the publicity from that case really would have exposed the Chicago area Planned Parenthood clinics in a variety of different ways. But unfortunately, we'll never know because the case was settled. But it is a little bit reminiscent of the Kermit Gosnell case in Philadelphia, another really horrific abortion situation where you had, I believe, three women died in Kermit Gosnell's clinic, but an untold numbers of babies who were born alive, and then he would snip their necks. And the lack of thorough media reporting until the very, very end on that case was absolutely appalling.
Right. And, you know, a lot of the situations with Kermit Gosnell where there were no inspections, there were no protections whatsoever. And that's what we have here in Illinois as well, where no Planned Parenthood in Illinois has been inspected or licensed by the Department of Public Health since 1999. And it's not like the media doesn't know about it. We've done extensive reporting on this. We have government documents dating all the way back to 1999. We presented to reporters throughout the Chicago area. And while many of them say this is shocking, their editorial boards don't want them to write about it.
Yeah.
And so when you have these lacks of restrictions, these lacks of protections for women and children, that's when these problems happen.
Right.
And that's when all of these, you know, abortion clinics just continue to go on without any protections for women. And when this report comes out in the Chicago Tribune showing, you know, how great having no restrictions is, it is sickening.
Yeah.
Because you can see that no restrictions isn't something to be proud of.
Well, no, and you know, it's if the state of Illinois, if Governor Rauner wants a Gosnell here, he's pretty much giving, you know, giving the opportunity
for
that. It
is primed and ready to go.
It certainly is, very well could be happening. We just don't know about it yet. There's a terrific book that two Irish investigative reporters who flew to America, who covered the entire trial, they were shocked when they got here. They thought they would be waiting in line, press and stuff. They basically had, you know, for most of the part, wow, you know, most of the courtroom to themselves. To Anne McElhenney and Fela McAleer are the two Irish investigative journalists. And they wrote a book called Gosnell, The Untold Story of America's Most Prolific Serial Killer. Gosnell, The Untold Story of America's Most Prolific Serial Killer by Phelim McAleer and Anne McElhenney from Ireland. It's an absolutely fascinating legal read about the city of Philadelphia and the state of Pennsylvania's lack of oversight into the abortion industry there, and how what's incredibly troubling, too, is that really this doctor preyed on women of color and immigrant women far more than he did on wealthier white women. In fact, he had different operating rooms for women of color and for white women. And he was African-American himself. He has, of course, been convicted on 3 counts of murder. He will spend likely the rest of his life in jail. But the lack of attention that was brought to his case, I think, is really, as I mentioned, it should be exemplary for Illinois. It should be some kind of, you know, warning to us here in Illinois that our inability in this state to hold anyone in the abortion industry to any level of accountability is really rather shocking. They have really been given carte blanche, haven't they, here in Illinois?
Absolutely. And when we look at things, our argument to lawmakers are, let's just hold them to the same standard that you would hold, say, a tanning salon.
Right.
You know, because tanning salons, nursing homes, and Chicago restaurants are required to be inspected an average of once every year.
Right.
And Chicago abortion clinics are being inspected an average of 6, 7, 8 times, you know, 8 years. And why are abortion clinics so open, and why are they allowed to operate this way when you wouldn't even go to a restaurant that hadn't had a food inspection?
Of course not.
In 8 years.
Yeah, this is the thing. And for organizations that claim to represent the interests of women, if that's really true, wouldn't you want the woman that you love to be in a sterile, clean, safe environment with a respected and professional, you know, medical personnel? Of course you would. You would not take, you know, I mean, they it's so interesting. On the one hand, they complain about the back alley and unsafe abortions. But at the very same time, they are giving protection to these kind of back alley butchers that are operating, you know, under the, you know, full vision, really, of the law when you think about it.
Well, and Mary, those back alley abortion clinics that they say we'll go to if this happens, they're already happening right now. And right. The Department of Public Health has started to shut down the clinic because of it.
Right.
So it's a big problem right now.
It is. Well, we'll continue this conversation when we come back from our break. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in for Father Anthony today on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
How long has it been since you've been on a picnic? Winds of Change is inviting you to St. Stan's Community Picnic on Sunday, August 20th from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. What is a picnic without food? Ethnic plates include Hispanic, Polish, and Asian for only $6 a plate and a $3 kids hot dog plate. And what's a picnic without kids games, music, bouncy house, and of course, great food? Bring the kids, bring the family, bring your lawn chairs and sunglasses and an appetite for great food. St. Stan's Community Picnic, Sunday, August 20th from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. on the St. Stan's Church grounds. 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Every first Friday, Jeff Hammond sits in to host Winds of Change to talk about the First Friday devotion. Jeff is the section representative of the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre for the Archdiocese of Chicago. Jeff will share the history, tradition, and prayers of the First Friday devotion. First Fridays at noon on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I am sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And my guest this hour is the executive director of Illinois Right to Life, Emily Trzynski. We're discussing the media treatment of malpractice in the abortion industry, and in particular, an article that appeared on the front page of the Chicago Tribune yesterday, Sunday, above the fold, as we say in the media business, lauding the state of Illinois as being a sort of, they call it an abortion last resort. So women who live in states where there might be informed consent, where women have to receive all the information about the abortion procedure, where they might have to obtain an ultrasound, where there might be a 48-hour or 72-hour waiting period prior to going forth with this, you know, irreversible surgery, in order to avoid those laws that are really in place to protect women and to protect them in particular from someone who might be pressuring them to do something they don't want to do. In order to skirt those laws, Illinois allows women to come here, you know, no questions asked, no asking a minor whether or not they are here with their parents' permission. Emily, you were telling me that the reporter for the story actually did contact you at one point. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I spoke to the reporter extensively, just really going through the story with her and trying to, you know, kindly argue that her story was one-sided and it was biased and that the facts needed to be explored more. And in particular, one case where she was talking about House Bill 40, which is a bill that would require the state of Illinois to provide free abortions for those on Medicaid and the state employees for any reason. So, you know, if they find out their child has Down syndrome, free abortion. If they find out their child is a girl and they want a boy, free abortion. And this is a bill that is being considered by the General Assembly. It is past the General Assembly, and they're holding it, waiting it to go to the governor. And she said that you can see in Illinois how we even have our own struggles with abortion and how there is even some negativity towards abortion here coming from our governor. And I told her, you know, this bill that they're trying to pass is one of the most extreme in the entire country.
Mm-hmm,
and
right.
She said, well, compared to like Iowa? And I said, no, compared to the entire country.
Compared even to California, which
exactly.
Is saying something.
that this bill is unheard of, it's out of line, it's out of touch, and it's ridiculous that this is being cited as, oh, poor abortion industry, this is something that Illinois has to fight. And, you know, she went back and forth, and she said, no, I do agree with you on that. And then the story comes out, and it's still very pro HB 40.
Right.
And so it's really, and then this is what we fight at Illinois Right to Life a lot. We often argue with reporters, trying to give them the facts for their story.
Right.
And they come in with very much, you know, one
focus. The story's already written sometimes,
exactly.
Right? So I had this experience back in January where they interviewed me for a story about why my pro-life views wouldn't permit me to attend the Women's March on Washington, the P-Hat March, as we've called it from time to time, and why I wouldn't go, and why I wouldn't bring my daughters there, my three daughters there. I took them to see the movie Hidden Figures instead because I want them to have role models, you know, of how women should act with dignity and demand respect of others and to use their brains and not to put on, you know, genitalia hat and march around screaming things at people. I just didn't think that was a particularly empowering thing. But why I felt as a pro-life woman, and how I, as a pro-life woman, represent many other women and who were specifically told to stay home. And when the story came out, you know, and I gave her the name of a pro-life OBGYN, who's a woman who was willing to be interviewed. I gave the reporters so many other names. I think I probably given your name as well, Emily, to try to expand the very narrow vision of a pro-life woman that the reporters seemed to have. And when the story came out, you know, they interviewed some professor from someplace who was quoted with her title, with her professional credentials. And I was just Mary Fiorito from Elmwood Park, Illinois. That was it. Not that I'm an attorney, not that I've worked 25 years in the pro-life movement, not that I've, you know, nothing. I was just, you know, some housewife who, you know, gosh, just didn't want to go. You know, it was crazy. So but I did get the sense, and I really kept at these reporters. I talked because they were co-writing the story. I really kept at them and said, but you're not, your vision is very odd here. I don't think you're accurately reflecting the pro-life movement and women or the real concerns that pro-life women had. And I said, gosh, this really would have been, this could have been a great moment for unity. But it was the pro-choice movement who said, absolutely not. If you are a woman and you are pro-life, you are not welcome. That was, but again, just to go back to my initial point of why you might have experienced that, I have found that sometimes reporters come in, and again, either the editor has suggested this or they themselves have made up their minds, right?
Right.
So,
and that's what we see over and over again in Illinois here is the pushing of this agenda, which has raised the number of abortions in Illinois to almost 40,000 a year.
Yeah.
And when you look at the numbers who travel to Illinois, is approximately 3,200. So it's not only those traveling around, you know, from these other states that are just flocking to Illinois.
Just organically, we have very high abortion numbers. And so many of those abortions, you know, occurring in the communities with people of color, which is also, I think, an incredibly distressing thing. I was privileged to have Pastor Cesar LaFleur on this show a couple of weeks ago. And he himself was saying, you know, if we talk about violence in the African-American community, and he said, if we are not talking about this kind of violence against our people, we are never going to solve the greater problem of violence in the Black community. I mean, he really, it was a very, very powerful, you know, presentation he gave when he was here with me. But, you know, when you, it makes me think of, you know, another interview. Now, this would have been a number of 20 years ago or so when Dr. Mildred Jefferson, who's an African-American physician who was the first Black woman to graduate from Harvard's medical school, came to speak here around the time of the Roe anniversary. It was an event called Speak Out Illinois, which was at the time held at the old Blackstone Hotel downtown. And Dr. got up. I was the media person for the day. So for the organization, I was helping to connect reporters with the different speakers. And I said to the Tribune reporter, oh, the next speaker is the first African-American woman to graduate from Harvard's medical school. Her name is Dr. Mildred Jefferson. And he looked at me, he said, I can't take you at your word on that. I said, oh, well, you could, you know, certainly you could verify that with Harvard or verify that with many, many ways in which you can, you know, confirm that what I'm saying to you is true. And he said, you know, I'm not going to bother. I can't trust that what you're saying to me is true.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was bizarre. It was the most, you know, we had the woman's bio in front of us. You know, I said, easily you could dispute this and wouldn't it be an interesting story if we were lying about that, right? I mean, and he absolutely, he mentioned that Dr. Jefferson had spoken, but refused to, again, same with me, right? Refused with the story I did, acknowledge her credentials. acknowledge how significant she was to the Black community, acknowledge her intellectual gifts and contributions as a Black woman doctor. It was just bizarre. So I think there does seem to be, you know, a particular interest in making pro-lifers look uneducated, making them look out of touch. I remember when David Shaw, who was a Pulitzer Prize winning reporter for the Los Angeles Times, he actually won the Pulitzer for this particular investigative study. He interviewed hundreds of colleagues in the secular media, and the vast majority of them not only said they were pro-choice, they couldn't name one friend or family member who held the pro-life position. So
we see that all the time when we're educating. And the most interesting thing is I had one woman just last week say to me, she was very pro-choice, worked for an abortion clinic in Chicago, or volunteered for one at one point, and she said, I have never met another pro-life person who actually cared. And she said, thank you for caring.
Wow. And cared in what way? What did she do? Unpack that for me, please.
She was hurting after an abortion. She was frustrated because she was a Planned Parenthood donor. She was a Planned Parenthood volunteer currently. And when she was on the medical side, when she needed the abortion, according to her words, she said that they weren't there for her. They gave her terrible medical services. They treated her like she didn't matter. And when she called looking for support afterwards, nobody had anything for her. And so she had a very hard time calling us. She said, I don't know anyone who's pro-life. Oh. And after our conversation that lasted 3, 4, 5 hours, she said, I've never met someone who cared.
Wow. Well,
in the pro-life movement.
Well, thank you for being there for her. You know, that is something I think that's often overlooked in the pro-life movement is our the services that we offer to women who are post-abortive. You know, I know people are really fond of saying, boy, you know, you pro-lifers, you only care about, you know, the babies until we're born. No, not only do we care about the babies after we're born, we also care about the women after she's had an abortion. I'm very privileged to serve on the national board for the Office of Post-Abortion Reconciliation and Healing, Vicki Thorne, who is the Project Rachel founder. So that is just much a part of our pro-life work as it is trying to prevent the abortions in the first place, right? Because so many, they're victims, and they don't know they're doing it in fear, or they're doing it under tremendous duress, so that we can be there on both ends for the woman.
Right. And we have over 100 pregnancy centers right here in Illinois that are providing free services to women. You know, these, the pregnancy testing, the counseling, the maternal support, whether it's food, housing, clothing. They have 100 of them compared to the 25.
Yes. When you compare the actual services to children who are born, the pro-life movement is the greatest private provider of social services to men, women, children, and families in the country. Okay, well, we're going to take our final break now. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750. WNDZ, and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
There is a lot going on at St. Stan's. St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. There is Eucharistic adoration before the iconic monstrance, confessions 4 days per week, and masses in English, Polish, and Spanish. There's much more waiting for you here. St. Stan's is right off the Kennedy Expressway, just 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Find out more by going to ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org, and enter into the presence of Christ.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750. WNDZ, and we have been having an absolutely fascinating conversation today with Emily Trzezinski, who is the executive director of Illinois Right to Life, Illinois' largest educational pro-life organization. And we've been talking about some of the peculiarities of Illinois and its abortion law. And for you listeners who are listening from our bordering states or out of state, if in case you think this doesn't impact you, you should listen, because what we've been talking about is a story that the Chicago Tribune did on the front page on Sunday above the fold about the number of people from Michigan, from Indiana, from Wisconsin, from Iowa, from Missouri, who travel to Illinois to avail themselves of the pretty kind of loose and free abortion laws that we have here, and the lack of oversight at many of these facilities that allow minors to come in, that allow those who are, you know, more complicated second and third trimester abortions to come in and simply have these procedures with no questions asked, no question asked to the woman about whether or not she's being compelled or forced, no medical follow-up afterwards. So this really does affect sort of the whole Midwest. But we were also speaking about why the Tribune might have run this story to begin with. And Emily's surmised, and I happen to agree with her, that we think that this is in large part to put pressure on Governor Rauner, the governor of the state of Illinois, to sign a bill that's sort of sitting in the Illinois Senate right now, which is House Bill 40, which will permit blanket funding of public funding for abortion, and as well as sort of enshrining Roe versus Wade and its companion case, Doe versus Bolton, into Illinois law, should Roe and Doe ever be modified or overturned. So this is, it meant Governor Rauner had promised the pro-life community he would veto this bill. The vast majority of people who live in this state do not believe in publicly funded abortions, nor do they believe in abortion for all 9 months for any reason. Just poll after poll affirms these, you know, these very common sense. People want to see abortions a little more tightly regulated. They want to see them really done only in cases of pretty dire circumstances, right? Yeah,
right.
They don't want...
One thing that is interesting we see in the schools all the time is I'll present Planned Parenthood's position and how this is a bill that they push. And students will tell me over and over again, well, Planned Parenthood doesn't really represent what I support for abortion. Mm-hmm. So there's a big disconnect that's starting to happen between Planned Parenthood's extreme agenda for abortion and even those people here in Illinois who consider themselves pro-choice.
Right. They're pro-choice, but they're not that pro-choice, right?
Exactly.
I mean, they get very uncomfortable when you talk about things like sex selection abortions, which frankly are perfectly legal here in the state of Illinois. But there's another bill that's just as insidious, I was going to say more insidious, but I don't know if I could say more, but it's just as insidious, which is a bill that was actually signed, Senate Bill 1564, that was signed by Governor Rauner and with effect on January 1st. And that bill essentially requires any Catholic pregnancy center, any pregnancy center of any denomination, frankly, any pro-life pregnancy center, any Catholic doctor, any Catholic hospital, anyone who encounters a pregnant woman, despite what the religious beliefs or the mission statement of the organization or hospital that might be involved here, any woman who wants an abortion can no longer just be told, we don't do those services here. This is not something we provide. Now, according to the law, you must give the woman the name, the contact information, and all other information relevant to her being able to secure an abortion at another facility. You have to give her the information, I believe the law says, where one reasonably believes you can obtain an abortion. Emily, can you talk a little bit about that law and how it's impacted pregnancy centers in particular in the state of Illinois?
Yeah, you know, I just have to say, as a woman myself, I find this law offensive that they think I am not smart enough to Google and
right.
find an abortion clinic myself when I clearly Googled and found that pro-life doctor or that pregnancy center, no problem. What this law really, to picture the impact of this law, we have to walk through a pro-life OBGYN who's caring for a couple, and they find out that their child has Down syndrome, or that a test
right.
says their child has Down syndrome, because they're not always accurate. And that doctor is now required to tell that family, well, you can go have an abortion as an option. he has to describe the benefits of abortion.
Right.
And then he has to, if they say, okay, I want the abortion, he has to tell them where they can get the abortion.
Right.
And pregnancy centers are equally in just as much of a conflict, because now most pregnancy centers do present abortion as an option because they want to talk to the woman about it. They don't want to just, you know, pretend like it doesn't exist.
Right.
They want to talk to the woman
about
it. Pretend
that she's not thinking about
right.
it. Right. Because that's why sometimes women come into pregnancy centers.
Yeah. And so, but then they have to tell them the benefits of abortion. And, you know, there are no benefits to abortion.
Right.
And then if that woman says, well, I would like the abortion, they have to now assist her in finding a clinic to get that abortion.
Yeah.
And pro-life people cannot in good conscience assist in any way
no.
in an abortion. And on top of that, I think that it's the Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry in Illinois who's becoming so desperate because they're starting to lose hold here in Illinois that they are trying to get everyone to be a walking, talking advertisement for their abortion business.
Correct. And as if we didn't have enough abortions here in Illinois, now they want them publicly funded. Now they want pro-life doctors and pregnancy centers to refer for them and to facilitate, you know, even more abortions to happen. And part of this, I think, of course, is driven by the fact that there's so much money in the abortion business. And I think
right.
that people, if you don't think that that is a motivating factor, you need to wake up. Because, you know, you go back and you talk to a number of what I think is so wonderful about the pro-life movement, in addition to providing compassionate services to women who have had abortions, we've also really been able to be sort of a safe haven and a help to people who come out of the abortion industry. Former abortion practitioners, former abortion nurses, former clinic owners, rather. And the stories that they tell, my, are they revealing. And I remember one of them, a physician, telling me, she said, listen, those of us who got into it, we did it because we had huge medical school loans, right? She said, in my first year as an abortion provider, I made like $300,000. This was back in the 70s. And she said, a lot of it was cash under the table. And she said, and once you start making that kind of dough, it's very hard to pull yourself from it. You know, she eventually did have a big conversion experience, and I think she runs a pregnancy center now. But she said, you cannot divorce the financial incentive to abortion itself. It's simply too interlocked.
Absolutely. And when you look at these pregnancy centers that are services of charge to women that receive no government support and that are by donations from their own community, you can see the vast contrast in the ideologies here, especially when Planned Parenthood goes on about how they want more services for women. Well, they're directly attacking pregnancy centers.
Right.
And as a result, the pregnancy centers here in Illinois have sued the governor over
right.
this law. And many pregnancy centers now are not operating because of this law, because they don't want to violate it and get fined, or because they don't want to continue to operate and have to follow the rules
right.
that have been instituted by this.
Well, no, it's you know, I serve on the board of Aid for Women, which is a pregnancy center in the Chicago area. We also operate two maternity homes where women can live with their children up until 3 or 4 years after they've given birth, in order to, you know, really stabilize their lives and become completely independent. So, you know, we serve women of all races, creeds, colors, ages. And Aid for Women was one of the first pregnancy centers to file suit against the state of Illinois and the governor because of this law, because we simply could not, according to our mission and our charter, materially cooperate in helping a woman obtain an abortion. We simply couldn't do that. So we were part of the initial lawsuit represented by a wonderful pro-life pro bono law firm called the Alliance Defending Freedom, who represented Aid for Women, another pregnancy center in the Rockford area, and then another pro-life OBGYN, Dr. Anthony Caruso. And so the judge did agree with us that there were significant, not only religious liberty issues, because we're a Catholic pro-life organization, but also some pretty fundamental free speech issues, First Amendment things that came up, because really what you're talking about is government-mandated speech. And can the government mandate you to say something is good, like abortion, when you believe it is not good? Can they force you to say that? And that's essentially what this law is doing. So the judge did provide a temporary injunction until the litigation is complete, but only as it applies to Aid for Women, the center in Rockford, and Dr. Caruso. So Aid for Women's been protected by this injunction, but none of the other pregnancy centers in Northern Illinois are. So right now, Aid for Women has seen a tremendous increase in the number of clients. So, well, Emily, the time, as usual, always goes too fast. So grateful to you for all your fine work at Illinois Right to Life. You can Google Illinois Right to Life Committee online and learn more about Emily and her colleagues and the presentations that they provide in schools. This has been Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed. What's there to say when right from wrong has become so obscure? It does not take that long. Can you see?